things, and there's things that are objectively bad that everyone can agree are bad, or most people agree are bad, and then there's things that opinion-based least favorite things. And let's clarify, like mint chocolate chip ice cream, objectively bad. Worst ice cream, right? Everyone can agree, probably? All right, good. Good. It's just frozen toothpaste and chocolate chips. Guys, come on. It's not very good ice cream. But an opinion would be a least favorite holiday, right? Like you might be like, oh, I don't like 4th of July because I don't like blowing up money because fireworks. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. My least favorite is April Fool's Day. You guys might be like, that's kind of weird. You're a funny guy. You pull pranks. I do. But on April Fool's Day, everyone's empowered to pull pranks. And they like getting back at me. And I don't like that. So anyway, that would be more of an opinion thing. So whenever I say I have a least favorite Bible story, I'm not saying it's the worst. I'm not saying it's awful. It's just out of all the Bible stories, this is my least favorite to read. This is my least favorite to go through. It's kind of like how like every parent has a least favorite child, right? Like if the government mandated that you had to give up one of your children for adoption, you know who it is. You're not going to say it, but you have it figured out. Everyone's like, yeah, you're not wrong. I have a least favorite Bible story. This isn't a terrible story. It's just my least favorite to go through. So if you want to figure out what it is, we are in Mark 5 today. We're taking a short break from the I Am series that my dad's going through, talking about all the times that Jesus says, I am, referencing himself to God who says, I am, as his name. So we're taking a short break from that. We're just going to be in here for a second. We're still going to be talking about Jesus. All good stuff. But we are in Mark 5, and Jesus, we'll just start in verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So right off the bat, we meet our first character, Jairus, and Jairus needs Jesus' help, right? And we start off with a very, very simple, easy story of someone needing Jesus' help, someone needing God's help. A lot of Bible stories start out like this, and so it'd be a very easy application of, oh, we need Jesus' help, we go to Jesus, we ask for Jesus' help, he helps us, boom, done. All right, that would be the story, that would be the sermon. Jairus needs Jesus' help, and here's a few things we know about Jairus. All right, first of all, he's a synagogue leader, right? Which a synagogue is kind of like the church back then. It's comparable. So he would be kind of like a pastor, maybe like an elder or someone, but definitely someone that everyone in the town would know. Jairus is probably a pretty popular guy. Everyone would kind of know him. He's a religious leader. And Jairus has a daughter. And his daughter is dying. And so we have the setup of Jairus, a well-known guy. Everyone kind of knows Jairus, and they're all hearing about his daughter dying. And you have to be thinking the disciples are like, this is awesome. Everyone's going to hear about this miracle. Everyone's going to be like, Jesus is awesome. He's healing people's daughters. This is great. And so we have the setup. All right. And then next part. So verse 24. So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. So once again, easy stuff. Jesus has a mission now. All right, Jesus now has a mission. Like a lot of Bible stories, Jesus is going somewhere, he's going to do something awesome, and then everyone's going to celebrate, right? Easy story. And so far, the story's good. So far, this is easy. So far, this sounds like every other story, like, great, Jesus is going to go in, he's going to heal this woman, or he's going to heal this girl. I'm kind of giving spoilers for the part I don't like. He's going to heal this girl, and then he's going to go out, and everyone's going to be happy. This is going to be great. And then comes a part that kind of throws me off. Here we go in a verse, let me see, I went down to verse 24, so we'll just go verse 25. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she had heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touched his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized the power had gone out from him. He turned around the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? This is what's frustrating to me. All right? I'm a story guy. And if you watch a movie or read a book, there is or a play or whatever, there's a first, second, and third act in a story. Okay, first act, you set it up, you're meeting the characters, you get the plot. Okay, that's what happens in the first act. Second act, everyone's traveling to the third act. Everyone's going that way, and everything should be following through. And then the third act is the climax. Okay, right here, we get introduced to this weird, like, side story thing of this woman. It's like, this isn't about you. Why are you coming into the story? Why are you interrupting this? And that's what bothers me. And this probably doesn't bother you. You probably think I'm being nitpicky. I probably am being nitpicky. But this is what bothers me. Is I'm a story guy. This would be like if you're watching a football game and you're watching the first quarter and you're like, okay, great, they're playing football, they're tackling each other, whatever. The second and third quarter, they're playing golf for some reason. You're like, no one wanted to watch golf. No one tuned in for golf. Why are you doing this? And then the fourth quarter, they get back to playing football, and that's how they end the game. It'd be like if in another Jesus' miracles, right? Like he's walking on water. He asks Peter to walk on water with him, and Peter's walking on water. And then Peter falls and starts drowning, and Jesus goes, and he's like, hey, disciples, let's have a conversation. And so Peter's drowning, and Jesus is like, yeah, I'm not focused on you right now. That would be comparable to that. That's not what happens. Jesus saves Peter, and Peter doesn't die in that story. But it's comparable to that. There's this poor, dying little girl, and Jesus is like, who touched me? Which, by the way, Jesus has no sense of personal space, if you read the Bible. There are multiple stories of him going up to the disciples and blowing in their faces. One of the last things he does is he's washing the disciples' feet. Okay, he doesn't care about being touched, so why is Jesus so adamant about this right now that he's like, who touched me? And Jesus had multiple excuses not to stop right now, right? So many excuses not to stop right now. So let's get into those. The first excuse would be that the job was already done. And the first excuse that Jesus would have is the job was already done. She was healed. Jesus knew that. Jesus knows things. He shouldn't be asking dumb questions. Jesus knows. He felt the power come out from him. The Bible says that. He knows she's healed. All right, why is he stopping? The job was already done. In verse 30, at once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him, he turned around the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? The disciples said, you see the people crowding against you, and yet you can ask, who touched me? So basically, there's a lot of people, right? It's like Lanesville Heritage Week. You're just piling through people, throwing elbows. Like, you're not wondering who touched you. Everyone in Lanesville touched you, all right? So Jesus is going through this crowd, and he's like, who touched me? And they're like, everyone's touched you now, Jesus. There's germs everywhere. It's awful, all right? The black plague is coming. You see the people crying against you, his disciples answered, and yet you can ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Whenever we hear that the woman was healed, whenever we hear, she's healed, she got the power, Jesus has the power to heal her, it's done, it's over. That was the story. Jesus was thinking this job isn't even close to done yet. See, it didn't come just to do the miracles. Jesus didn't come everywhere just to perform the miracles everywhere. No, Jesus came for the people. And when everyone else thought the job was done, it's over, Jesus was like, no. I'm not here just to do the work. I'm here to connect with people. I'm here to show people God's love. I feel like as Christians, we do this thing where we see this awesome thing happen, where we see this work happen, or we see something get done, and we're like, oh, that was the thing. It's done. It's over. Like, for example, we'll help someone move, or we'll hear about this woman that needs help somewhere, so we'll help her get around her house. We'll cook someone a meal. We'll build someone a deck, and we'll do that for them, and we'll think that's the work. That's what needs to be done. We would rather spend 10 hours building a deck for someone or 10 hours cooking a meal for someone than 10 minutes having a conversation with someone. And Jesus knew that, and Jesus was like, I'm not just here to do the miracle. I'm not going to let this work go to waste. I'm going to use this time to connect with her. I'm going to use this time to talk with her. I'm going to use this time to make a difference. Yes, that miracle is awesome. But she needed to know more. She needed to make that connection. She needed to know that she was loved. Jesus isn't concerned about the physical need. If Jesus could only have come to fix us physically or fix us spiritually, 10 out of 10 times Jesus would have chose spiritually. Every single time. And we're so caught up on the physical. We're so caught up, and parents, you might be like this, where you want to make sure that your kid is safe and you won't let them play in the woods, or you won't let them swim in the pool without their floaties, and you make sure that they're smart, and you make sure they have friends, you make sure that they're popular, you make sure all this stuff. But how many times do we make sure that they're spiritually safe? How many times do we make sure that people are spiritually well off? Mark 9:43, do I have the verse up there? Mark 9:43. Awesome. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell, where the fire never goes out. Jesus is saying, I'd rather you be crippled and blind than to be spiritually crippled and spiritually blind. Jesus wasn't here just to perform the miracles. Jesus was here to heal people on a deeper level. We all hear that miracle and we're like, oh, the job's done. Jesus was like, no, there's still more work to do. It's not about what you can do for people physically. It's about what you can do for them spiritually. How many times do we see a homeless person with a cardboard sign and we'd give them $20, but we wouldn't give them 20 minutes of our time? We would give them $20 to get by, but we wouldn't spend $5 on them and have a meal with them instead and talk to them and make sure that everything's going well in their life, try to get them connected in a church, ask what we can pray for them for. Jesus sees this woman, and it's not just about healing her. He says, you're cared about. He says, where are you? He says, be freed from your suffering. Go in peace. By the way, I love you. By the way, I want to be there for you. So Jesus, the job wasn't already done to him, but he had another excuse. Jesus had made a commitment. Jesus had made a commitment. Okay, Jairus, poor Jairus in the story, by the way, he has to go and find Jesus. And this is back in a time with no phones, no emails, no laptops, no big venues that Jesus would be hanging out at. Jesus travels a lot. All right, so Jairus is just going from large crowd to large crowd trying to find Jesus until finally he gets to the right spot and he's like, yes, I finally found Jesus. And he puts in the work and he's like, Jesus, I need you to come and heal my daughter. And Jesus follows him. We don't know if Jesus said, yes, I'll come heal your daughter, but he's following Jairus. He's on his way there. So it feels like Jesus had made a commitment to Jairus. And he said, Jairus, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to be there for you. I'm committed to making sure that everything's going well for you. And then he stops. And Jairus is like, come on, Jesus, let's go. And he stops, and Jairus is like, no. What the heck could we be stopping for? Someone touched you? That's it? So poor Jairus, right? He's trying to get going. He's trying to heal his daughter. And Jesus seems to be occupied with something else right now. Jesus had made a commitment. But he cared about a different commitment he made a little bit more. Jesus' commitment wasn't, I'm going to go heal everyone. Jesus' commitment was, I'm going to love people where they're at. Jesus' commitment was, he's going to come here for us, and he's going to come here to love us. He's going to come here to show his love to us. And sometimes people come up to me, and they're like, Simon, I feel like you're not talking to the non-Christian enough, talking to the visitor, talking to the searcher enough. And so I try to help that out. I try to even out my lessons a little bit and make sure that non-Christians can get some connection out of that. But right now, I want to be very clear, I'm only talking to Christians. I want to be very clear right now, I'm only talking to those people that have committed their life to Jesus, because we've made a commitment too. Galatians 6:9-10, if I can get that verse up there. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. We've made a commitment. We've made a commitment when we were baptized, when we said the good confession, whenever we accepted Jesus as our Savior, we made a commitment. As we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people. We made a commitment to the family of believers. And even more than that, Matthew 28:18-20, this is the Great Commission. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. We made a commitment. This is our commission, and this is our commitment. We said we're going to be there for people. We said we're going to be there to baptize people. We said we're going to take the word to all nations. That was our commitment. Whenever you have a family, you're committed to your wife or your husband and your kids, and you have a job and you're committed to your job, and then you volunteer places and you're committed to volunteering, and you're committed to yourself too. You need to make sure that you're in good health. You need to make sure that you have energy. And all those commitments are important. But do all of them come first above our commitment to God? Because we live life saying, I'd love to help out there, or I'd love to minister to that person, but I've made a commitment somewhere else. I said I was going to go do this other thing. I said I was going to go be with my family right now, or I said I was going to be at work right now, or I said I was going to volunteer even at my church right now, and so we avoid ministering to people because we have these commitments. Is there any commitments that we've made that keep us from ministering to other people? Are there any commitments that we've made that keep us from loving other people? Yeah, Jesus made a commitment, but he made sure that commitment wasn't in the way of his first commitment, which was to love people where they're at, show people love, show people that they are cared about, show people God's love. And that's our commitment. Finally, Jesus had another excuse. There was something more important. Listen, let's get down to facts here. This woman's been bleeding for a while. Jesus could have healed her tomorrow. This girl is dying. We don't know how much time she has left. There was something more important going on. Also, Jesus just got some bad press. All right, the story right before this one. All right, Jesus and the disciples just had some bad press. Okay, here's what happens is Jesus goes and he heals a demon-possessed man. And the demon-possessed man, he says his name is Legion, which means many. Now, Legion would typically mean like 100, I think. So we'll just say like there's 100 demons in this man. And Jesus goes and he casts out the 100 demons. And the demons are like, please don't send us out of the area. I don't know what they mean by that. If they mean don't send us to hell or New Jersey or something. But they're like, please don't send us out of the area. So Jesus is like, okay, I'll send you into that herd of pigs. And then the pigs all run off a cliff. Because demons mixed with pigs aren't very smart, apparently. So here's how the story ends. Verse 17. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Jesus and the disciples just got some bad press. Everyone's like, don't let Jesus near you. He will kill your pigs. All right? Don't let Jesus in your town. He will destroy anything and do whatever it takes to heal one person. He will tear stuff up. Don't let him near there. And the disciples are like, man, everyone's going to hate us. Like, we're going to go around places and they're not going to want us to come there. And then here comes Jairus with the perfect front page story. Religious leader's daughter saved by Jesus and his disciples. This is great. This is good news. They got this. So the disciples are like, yes, we have a great story. Let's go, Jesus. Let's go heal this girl. Everyone's going to love us. Everyone's going to be talking good about us. We got to save this girl. There was more important stuff to do than to stop and have a conversation. At least to everyone around right then, everyone was like, there's something more important right now. This girl is dying. We need to save this dying girl. Who cares about this woman? I was listening to this podcast, and there was this leader talking to all these church leaders. Or he was talking about his conversation with all these church leaders anyway. He said he was telling them to make sure that they're greeting people and making sure that they're following up with people and making sure that the people in their church, all the visitors, that you get their names and stuff. And the church leaders were like, that's really hard. That's near impossible to get to the name of every visitor. It's really hard to get follow up with every single visitor. We can barely do that with our own congregations. And the leader was like, you're right, that's going to be really hard. And he asked them, do you guys do an offering every Sunday? They're like, yeah, we do an offering every Sunday. He's like, every Sunday, really? They're like, yeah. You guys tithe every Sunday? They're like, yeah, we have the congregation tithe every Sunday. He's like, really? Fascinating. It's like, so do you guys just do the offering and then you're like, you throw a random number on there, you average out what you've had every week, and then you say that's what the offering was, or do you count out every dollar and every cent? They're like, we count down every dollar, every cent. He's like, you count out every cent? They're like, yeah, we count out every cent. It's like, so you get the money down right to the cent. They're like, yeah. It's like, okay, what happens with checks? What do you guys do with checks? They're like, oh, we cash checks. He's like, you cash all the checks. Yeah, we cash all the checks. What happens if a check is filled out incorrectly. Do you wad it up and throw it away? They're like, no, we would never do that. He's like, oh, what do you guys do? It's like, oh, we would make a phone call or we would go to someone's house and we'd clarify and we'd make sure everything's right on the check. He's like, oh, okay. What happens if you can't read the number? Do you just round up or down to the nearest 5 or 10 or what do you do in that situation? They're like, oh, we'd still call or we'd still go to someone's house. It's like, so you would call or go to someone's house and follow up over the money. It's like, yeah. It's like all the church leaders just told me that they cared way more about their money than their congregation. All their church leaders said they cared more about the money, more about the offering than they did about the visitors and about those searching for God. Yeah, sometimes there seems to be like something more important. And a lot of times we think the less important person or the less important thing is the person in the room or the people in the room. We don't seem to care about everybody where they're at. Jesus could have done this big, grand thing. He could have healed a dying little girl. Everyone would have heard about it. The synagogue leader would have preached about it for the next 5 Sundays. It would have been awesome, but Jesus wasn't focused on that right then. Right then, the most important person to Jesus was the person that needed him. Is the most important person to us the people that need Jesus? And do we live like that? Do we act like that? Where the most important person every day is the person that we can reach, the person that we can talk to about Jesus? Is our coworker that we know doesn't know Jesus? Is our family member that we know is going through a hard time? Is our friend that we know is going through a hard time? Everyone else saw this woman as an interruption. Even me reading the story, I'm like, she's interrupting the story. She's throwing off the story. She's messing everything up. And we treat her like an interruption. So let's talk about interruptions. As we wrap up here, let's talk about what we see as interruptions. And I want to say at first that people aren't an interruption. So many times we see people as interrupting our day, whether it's a text or a phone call about our car's extended warranty. We're like, people keep interrupting our day. And we're like, we have plans, we have things that we need to do, we have places we need to go. So we kind of avoid people that we know will interrupt that, or we kind of avoid people that we know that will throw that off. We kind of avoid those hard conversations, we avoid those tough conversations. Jesus was interrupted by this lady. She touched him in a crowd. Power came out from him. He knew stuff was going on. And Jesus didn't treat her like an interruption. He didn't brush her off. He didn't say, don't do that again. He didn't say, I'll get to you tomorrow. He said, let's deal with this now. Let's talk now. Let's figure this out now. To Jesus, people aren't an interruption. I'm in college right now, so I have to plan out when I do my homework. I'm doing it online, so it's kind of up to me what my schedule's like. So I set aside time, and a particular night, I think it was a Thursday night, I set aside time, and I was like, I'm going to do my homework tonight. Got to knock this out. And I get a text from this kid who texts me a lot. He texts me a lot, and I'm like, and a lot of times it's easy to brush him off and say, I can't help you right now, I'm doing something. And so I get this text and I'm thinking, like, how am I going to brush him off right now? Like I have to do this thing. He asked me, can I get a ride to Louisville? I need to see my grandma. And I'm thinking, like, okay, I have to do homework. I'm pretty sure I was doing finals week at this time. And I'm like, this has to get done. This is important. This can't be an interruption in my day. And I stopped and I was like, I can help him. Yeah, my homework's important, but the time that I could have with him, the conversation I could have with him, anything that I can do for him, isn't that more important? So I picked him up. I took him to go see his grandma. I said, hey, you stay in there as long as you want. I'm going to go run an errand. I grabbed him some food, picked him up, took him back home, and I had a conversation with him. And this kid wasn't a kid that was going to be in our youth group a lot. This kid wasn't a kid that was going to even be around the area a lot. And it could have been very easy for me to say, not my responsibility, not something that I need to do. But, and I don't know where he's at. I don't know what he's doing today. I don't know where he's at with God. But I know that one day he was able to see the love that a Christian should show someone because of what I was able to do. And at the end of the day, that's up to me. That's not up to him. That's something I can control. That's not something that he can control. It's how much love I show him. And what I can do for him. When we treat people like an interruption, we treat people like they're not the thing that matters right now. I don't And I can't ever see that as Christianity. It's something that I struggle with all the time where kids are asking for help and kids want to have conversations. I'm like, yeah, can we do that tomorrow? Can we do that another time? I'm focusing on Ryan Alessa. I'm focusing on planning this event. And it's something that I need to stop and say, what's more important to me right now? This event or this lesson or where this kid is at spiritually with God? Can I do more in a lesson or can I do more in a conversation? Can I do more by going to church and by working on something, by seeing something someone healed physically, or can I do more by making sure people are right spiritually? Another thing that we see as an interruption sometimes that just isn't is God's work, the work that God has planned for us. Every year we have this big TCTC trip where we take like 40 plus people to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and we have this awesome youth convention, and a big part of that is finding transportation. And so I have this list in my office of people with 7 plus passenger vehicles, and I'm calling them and I'm cornering them. I'm like, hey, I need you. This is God's calling on your life, is you driving these kids to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. That's what God needs from you this weekend. And so I have that conversation. Sometimes they go really well. Sometimes people leave the church, but it's fine. Anyway, there was this young, naive couple that does some stuff at the church, but I was like, I bet I can get them. And so I asked Pete and Catherine Rosinski, who help out a lot at the church, hey, can you guys drive, can you take a weekend off and drive to Gatlinburg, Tennessee and back with these kids? And Pete said, and Pete's a very busy guy. Pete has a lot of work, and he's like, if I can get off work, I'll do it. Which is a huge commitment from them because they have kids and taking a weekend off, that's their weekend to rest. And instead, they'll be spending it with 40 teenagers, and that sounds exhausting. I was there. It was exhausting. And instead, I get a text from Pete, and he said, hey, I got the time off. I'd be honored to help out. Which was awesome, and we do the ride up and we do the ride back, and I'm not gonna make any assumptions about Pete's heart because he's not here. If he was, I'd call him up and then we'd have a real conversation. But the Wednesday after, he said, hey, that weekend was really special, and I got to meet and connect with a lot of students, and I just asked off for every Wednesday now so that I can help out every Wednesday at youth group. And he saw that God's work wasn't an interruption in his week. See, sometimes we see God's work and we're like, man, I have to ask off for that. I have to put time away for that. This is gonna just pop up in my week. We see people that need God's help, and we see that as an interruption to the more important things that we have to do, or our schedules, or whatever else we plan on doing. What if we stopped seeing God's work as an interruption to our lives and started seeing our lives as an interruption to God's work? And started telling people, no, I can't help out with that, or no, I'm not going to be able to go to work today, or no, we're not going to be able to do this thing today because God needs us somewhere else. If we rearranged our lives and stopped, and for decades, Christians have bent over to work and said, okay, you know what, you all win, we're going to work on your schedule, and we're going to do everything that you ask of us. What if we start saying, no, we actually need this time to glorify God. We actually need this time to do God's work. I'm going to ask the worship team to come up here right now, and we're about to get into a time of worship, but before we get there, I have one more interruption that we all deal with, that we all think of, and I want to tell you that you aren't an interruption. You aren't an interruption. Can I get Galatians 2:20 up there? It says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me, who loved us and gave himself for us, who loved you and gave himself for you. Jesus never saw you as an interruption. Jesus didn't see you as a face in the crowd. Jesus didn't see you as a person who was taking his time. No, Jesus came to this world and died specifically for you, specifically for all of us, because he never saw us as an interruption. He never saw us as something that was taking time away from him. No, he saw us as the reason for being. He saw us as the reason for dying on a cross. maybe you're going through some physical pain or going through some spiritual pain or going through some physical or spiritual hardship right now. I want you to know that Jesus wants to reach down. He wants to look you in the eye, and he wants to say, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering. Maybe you're weighed down by something. Maybe something's holding you back. Maybe something's keeping you from living for God fully. He wants to look at you. He wants to say, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering. God wants to free you from your suffering. But the first thing it takes is you reaching out in faith and saying, I need your help. I need you. I need you to heal me. I need you to get me out of this place. Jesus wants to get you there. I want to finish this story because we have this interruption, we have this bump in the road, and we realize this wasn't an interruption. This was an integral, great part of the story. This woman that takes Jesus' time, and we see Jesus reach down and heal her. But then the story goes on, and Jairus has his servants come, and his servants say to him, your daughter died. Don't bother Jesus anymore. And Jairus must have been heartbroken hearing that his daughter died. And Jesus said, no, we're going to keep going. And they get to Jairus' house, and Jesus sees Jairus' dead daughter, and he says, she's not dead, she's asleep. And Jesus goes, and he heals his dead daughter and raises her from the dead. Guys, if we put our faith in Jesus and we decide to live on his time instead of telling Jesus to live on our time, watch bigger things happen. Jairus wanted Jesus to come and heal his dying daughter. Instead, he got to see his daughter raised from death to life because Jesus said, let's work on my time. Let's work on God's time. Let's live by faith. Let's stop and let's make sure that we love everyone along the way. And when we get to where we wanted to go, watch how much bigger things got. Jesus wants to do that same thing in your life. Jesus wants to take that small expectation that you had of him and show you how much bigger he can make it. Jesus wants to reach down and show you his love.